Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes, and today we're going to continue our conversation with Jay Richards about artificial intelligence and what a senior American icon, Henry Kissinger, has recently said about this in his article, How the Enlightenment Ends. Jay, thanks again for joining us.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Your book celebrates the human advantage, that's the title, and it also looks at how humans can work well with machines. Sounds like the idea is we can be friends, huh? Not going to overtake us and become our enemies?
Absolutely. I mean, we can be friends in the sense, I mean, I think that we're in danger of forgetting that we make these things. Yeah. These are tools that we build, and they don't just sort of get away from us. In fact, the thing that programs tend to do if they fail is they just freeze up. That's the thing to worry about. I think Kissinger, he's sort of imagining these things just sort of getting off by themselves and, you know, causing all sorts of mischief. But when those things happen, say a computer virus, those are created by human beings. And so they almost inevitably find their way back to human creators. And I think it's really important to remember that these are very, very powerful tools. They're extensions of our own creativity. And the kind of moral questions finally and ultimately redound back to us.
You know, since ID the Future is not just about evolution, but also intelligent design, we are talking about what humans have created and what capabilities they have and don't have. And this involves thinking critically about what sort of entities these are, AI, artificial intelligence, or machine learning, and what things they actually can and can't do. Now, in general, machines are good at big data and fast, right? So isn't that one advantage they have? That is an advantage, of course, that we gave them, right? We created that advantage.
Absolutely, because that's what we wanted. We wanted very specialized kinds of systems, especially in terms of just raw calculation. They're very, very, very fast. And so what's been happening in the last 30 years is how to combine the kind of raw calculation. If you just, again, think of a calculator, that's what we call them as calculators, with, as you said, big data. So huge amounts of information for which they can't be reduced to simple rules. And so you need statistical methods to be able to sort of crunch the data. Most of us presumably kind of do this when we learn certain tasks. We don't follow rules, at least in detail. We presumably do some kind of statistical interaction. When you're learning how to drive, you learn a set of rules. But then what you do is you practice it a lot. And it's the same thing with these systems. They just practice scenarios a lot and build up, you know, in these driving programs that Google's been running these things. I think for about 10 years, there have been these Google cars driving around. And now Uber has a fleet actually of Volvo XC90s in Pittsburgh that are driving around by themselves, gathering data. They already have years of data programmed into them, and they're just getting better and better as it goes on. And the nice thing is, with these systems is that they can program each other. So with human beings, we each have to learn how to drive individually. But once a machine has gathered all this data, then it can replicate that essentially. So you can think about programming a robot. The first one needs to gather a lot of data, but then it can share that with all the other robots that, you know, are sort of the same model. And so that's exciting, but I think it also scares a lot of people.
And speaking of scaring, could you describe some of the excesses of Kissinger's piece where he's worried about, you know, how quickly machines can, quote, do things, and he's worried about, I mean, he has sort of almost apocalyptic visions of our future. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, he does. And part of it, I think, is something he does understand, which is that in machine learning, these systems eventually figure out solutions by just iterating over and over. But like if you were to try to say, okay, so how did it get there? You wouldn't know. It's a bit of a black box. And so you'll get a system that'll actually come to the right solution of a problem, you know, how to turn right in a busy intersection again and again. But you don't actually know how it got there. And so even if it could explain how it did it, it probably couldn't. And that worries him. Well, I don't think that's that weird. It's the same thing with us. I don't know how to recognize my wife's face, but I do. That doesn't make it scary. And so I think in some ways it's only because he thinks that sort of opacity of that is worrisome. But I think also He seems to think that because systems, they are so much faster than we are, they will make far more mistakes far more quickly, and then the consequences will be greater. Well, yeah, maybe in the abstract, but when you think about this in any detail, I don't see why we should worry about that. I mean, he's forgetting beta testing. I mean, think about these Google cars. The millions and millions of hours of driving without any fatality. There was a fatality, I think, in Texas with an Uber car a few weeks ago, in which, again, somebody ran out into an intersection at the last second and the car hit them. But we shouldn't be trying to compare these things with some kind of perfection. Compare them with the live alternative, which is humans driving.
Right.
Humans driving is scary, too. We kill thousands of people every year in the United States get killed in car wrecks. But that's what we're trying to improve upon. We're not trying to create a perfect scenario. And so if anything, I'd say, well, let's worry more about the fact that lots of incompetent people driving are driving, because there's just going to be a huge amount of, there's been a huge amount of beta testing because Google understood the kind of PR problem of having a robot car that kills someone. And so they've been actually very, very slow in, you know, essentially converting this to commercial applications. That's going to happen. In fact, it may happen by the end of the year. If not, we keep talking about it being 10 years away. This is not 10 years away because it's happening right now in Pittsburgh. It's just how quickly they will be able to sort of either Uber and or Google will know how to convert this to commercial use. But I fully expect long-haul trucks and then sort of regular routes on city streets to be automated within a few years. Again, because the technology already exists and it's already doing it. Unless you're in one of the places, you haven't seen it happen.
Right. So here's a line that you might want to interact with. Kissinger says that when machines learn, and he has learns in quotations, it learns not conceptually but mathematically by marginal adjustments to the algorithms. Now, does he have a good point here?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happens in machine learning. You start with an algorithm that sets up the sort of general rules. I mean, you can think of it as driving. If you were to drive on a closed course that had, it's like bumper cars or something, so you couldn't actually get out of the course, but you could hit the walls. And then every time you hit a wall, you realize, okay, I need to not turn that quickly or something like that. And then you as a human being would learn this, and you'd learn how to drive. Even though the course isn't telling you exactly how fast to drive or where to turn, it creates the bounds, and then you learn within inside that. So again, this is mimicking, I think, that kind of empirical, generally inductive way that we learn lots of things. You get the kind of general rules, and then you sort of explore the space of possibility, and you build up a model. Now, I'm not saying for a minute that our brains are exactly like machines. I'm just saying is from an outside description, it's a similar way of learning. I don't find that especially eerie, simply because, again, if you don't like probabilities, I suppose, if you want certainties, but we don't live in a world of certainties, and we don't act in a context of certainties. And so if we want our machines to at least be able to do these things as well as us, if not better. And that's what we're looking for. And it doesn't terrify me in that way.
Yeah. Here's another line from Kissinger's piece. What will become of human consciousness if its own explanatory power is surpassed by AI? I think that this might be an interesting place to relate Kissinger's worry to one of the really interesting points in your book, The Human Advantage, about virtue. Virtue is not just the moral virtue that you talk about in your book, but there's also virtues intellectually. I've written about theoretical virtues that as we try to explain, come up with the best explanation of an event, the theory that exhibits the most virtues is more likely to be true. But these are not rules. These are not programmable rules. They're often very intangible values, intellectual values that have to be cultivated in order for a theory to be more likely to be true. And you don't see machines doing this sort of thing. I mean, Kissinger's worried about this.
No.
What's your take on that?
No, I mean, and I think that virtue requires freedom, and freedom requires consciousness and agency. And so really my argument in the book, I honestly think this debate in part comes down to kind of a metaphysical question and will be settled there, that if humans actually, if basically we are what we think we are, and everybody takes for granted that we are actual intelligent agents that have the capacity to affect the world and to affect ourselves and even to change ourselves to some degree, then what we are going to find is that these machines we're making, as much as they can mimic what we do, can never be that and never will be that. And so insofar as those capacities, call it the human residual, the stuff that does not overlap with any of these machines, then what we should do is focus on that as our comparative advantage in ways that actually enhance the capacities of machines, and the machines enhance our own capacities. And so a virtue is essentially, I mean, in some ways, it's like programming yourself. So you start out as a free agent with different kinds of inclinations, and by an intentional process of habit in which you act in a certain intentional way over and over, it starts kind of initially and internally with a choice to do this, and then it manifests itself externally in your body. Let's say you're learning to play the piano, you have to do things with your body over and over, and then that works its way back into who you are and what you are internally so that you eventually become a great pianist. And so in a sense, you could think of it as a kind of self-programming,
right.
But you actually have to have that capacity, and to have that capacity, you need agency and freedom. And my argument is that this is not something that these machines have. We don't make them to have it. And there's no reason in the world to think, when you look at what they're doing, that they're going to somehow develop that. It's just, it doesn't follow. The only reason I think anybody would really think that, either they're not being careful in their thinking, or they actually are themselves materialists, and so they think we're nothing but machines,
right,
calculating. We don't really have freedom. And so if that's true, then certainly we're going to create machines that can do the same thing we can, because we ourselves are machines. So again, this thing ends up, it looks like a debate about economics and technology. It's really a debate about metaphysics.
Wow. What are some final observations you might want to make about Kissinger's piece and their relation to your book, The Human Advantage?
Kissinger, I think, represents, he is one of many examples of people, especially people of his age who are intellectuals, don't have any particular religious moorings, and where they're likely to go intellectually once they start thinking about our artificial intelligence. And so I think it's important for those of us that aren't materialists to give a ready defense for, you know, for human uniqueness and dignity, honestly, to help allay people's fears. But I think that the debate over artificial intelligence and robots and automation, it's an opportunity for us to have this very interesting and very profound conversation about what it means to be human. And even if you don't want to ask that question, every single day, if you turn on the internet and connect to the internet, you're going to confront this question. And the question is whether we discover that we aren't really anything special. We're just machines made mostly of water and carbon and stuff like that. Or if we are something fundamentally different. We are makers of machines, but we are not ourselves machines. And so I encourage listeners not to be disheartened and worried, but certainly look into this. It's something that I think everyone is ultimately going to need to have an answer to.
Thank you, Jay, machine maker and book writer.
My pleasure. Great to be with you, Mike.
Yeah, so this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Thanks for joining us. And check out Kissinger's piece. Hey, just try Googling How the Enlightenment Ends, Kissinger. You'll probably snag it quickly. Also, check out on Amazon, The Human Advantage, The Future of American Work in an Age of Smart Machines, authored by our friend Jay Richards. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.